Hello and welcome to Films That Time Forgot, where we look at forgotten films from the early 80s to the early 2010s. I'm Adam Thornton, your host, and joining me today is Nick Bartlett.
Hello.
So Nick, what is it that you do exactly?
I have a job, but outside of that, I write a lot about films. I write for Slash Film, for Critical Popcorn, for Film Hounds, a bunch of different places.
So how long have you been writing about film for?
I had my own blog for like about 10 years and then I got recruited to write for Critical Popcorn, and I've been writing for them ever since. I think that was about five years ago. And since then I've just been going from outlet to outlet, occasionally covering like new releases, but mainly sort of older films.
So, did you come across today's film, the 1993, which is what we're covering in today's episode, the 1993 thriller Malice, starring Alec Baldwin, Nicole Kidman, and in his big kind of break, Bill Pullman, and written by Aaron Sorkin?
I mean, no, I've never seen it before. I'd heard of it. When I knew we were covering it, something there was like a lot something in my head set us. I recognized it from somewhere, and I realized it was from this old column that the AV Club used to do that I used to love reading. Was this It's called Scenic Routes,
Oh yeah.
and it's this guy, Mike D'Angelo, who wrote it. And it's basically like these stand. He just wrote a column about like standout films and like standout scenes in like some of his favorite films, and the big sort of centerpiece scene from this film was one of the ones he covered. So I sort of had a sort of I was aware of the film from that, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I mean, the one part of it gets quoted is, we'll come on to this later on, but there's this big speech where which Alec Baldwin gives, where he basically says, I am God, spoiling a little bit there. And that's one of the few parts that I think gets quoted a lot online. But other than that, I hadn't really heard of this film before. I came across it during COVID lockdown on Amazon Prime. I was like, Alec Baldwin, Nicole Kidman, why haven't I heard of this film?
Yeah,
And
it's a great cast, isn't it? It's one of those films where like in the opening credits, every name that appears, it's like, oh, I know that person. I know that person. It's even like right down to like there's Joseph Sommer, who's the bad guy from Witness. He's in it.
yeah.
I love all that stuff.
And there's also Tobin Bell from Saw. He kind of pops up sort of later on as well.
And Gwyneth Paltrow.
Oh
Like,
yeah, Gwyneth. That took me by surprise actually when I watched this again. I was like, oh, she's got quite a substantial role in this, or quite a pivotal role rather. Which is interesting that we don't remember it because it doesn't get talked about a lot because it actually did fairly well at the box office. It grossed 61 million worldwide on a 20 million budget, and it was Aaron Sorkin's next big film after the success he'd had with A Few Good Men, which he wrote the play and script for, which had come out literally the year before, and he was writing both scripts kind of simultaneously. It's kind of surprising that this never really caught on in the public's imagination in the same way.
Yeah, it's weird. Like there's one I think there's one notable pop culture reference, which is Alec Baldwin in oh what is what I've just drawn a complete blank. There's 30 Rock. In 30 Rock, he says that his character once claimed to be God in a deposition. I think
Yeah.
that's the one sort of pop culture reference that I've seen. I didn't and obviously at the time I didn't realize it was a reference to this film. But yeah, apart from that, it seems to have just not really made that much of an impression,
Yeah,
which is crazy.
which is weird when you consider how insane the plot of this film is. It really goes places.
Yeah, it is bonkers.
Because when it first starts off, you think it's going in a completely different direction because it starts off with a student going home from college and she gets strangled by what we later find out is a serial rapist attacking students. And you initially think, oh, this is going to be a sort of a crime thriller where this is the central plot. Because then at the hospital, we're introduced to this college lecturer, Andy, played by Bill Pullman, who argues with this local cop, Dana, about the lack of the police security on the campus, to stop this rapist. And we see the said student who'd been attacked being operated on by Dr. Jed Hill, played by Alec Baldwin, who manages to save her. So at this point in the film, very early on, you think, oh, it's going to be, this is going to be the central focus. I don't know if that's what you thought.
Yeah, well, yeah, I also what yeah, I, that was very much sort of, I thought I got the sort of feeling of the same sort of thing, like the sort of Kiss the Girls, Along Came a Spider, those sort that sort of police procedural thing. That's where I thought it was sort of headed, and like I don't know if you've seen the trailer for this
Oh,
film,
yeah.
but the trailer it really plays up that angle of it, and it even sort of like implies that Alec Baldwin is the killer, you know, like, or he's the suspect, and it's all like you watch that and you go like, okay, I think I've got a read on what this film's going to be, or you know,
Well, yeah,
what
because
sort
it.
of film is.
Well, yeah, because they actually. The scene that then follows sort of hints at Baldwin being kind of unhinged when they. Where they have him sort of calling out the other surgeon who was saying during the operating procedure, oh, you can't save the girl. And then he says, say that to me again and I'm going to rip out your lungs with an ice cream scoop. So in a normal scenario, you would go, oh, this guy's probably going to be the killer.
Yeah, I love that. I love that scene. I love the ending as well, where the guy's like, "I'm not gonna like you, am I?" And he's like, "Don't be ridiculous. Everyone likes me." I
Yeah,
love.
it's. The thing with Alec Baldwin's performance in this is that he plays it over the top, but not in a way where it becomes laughable and takes you out of the film. It still fits into the semi-serious tone that this film has.
Yeah, and I still, I still think I know he's I know does, he's a, not. We'll get into it in a bit. He's not a very nice guy, but he's. I think he's still the most likable character in the film. He's got a huge like, he's massive narcissist, and he's got you know, a huge pedant. But like, I don't know. He comes across as the most sort of fully fleshed out character to me, anyway. In the whole thing, I really enjoyed Alec Baldwin's performance in it.
He kind of goes really well from doing like comedy to tension in the same character. It does, as you say, flesh him out. So we then get Andy, bumping into Jed, asking him about the student's condition, and then recognizing him from high school, which is going to be an interesting point later on. And he then goes to see his wife, Tracy, played by Nicole Kidman, in her first Hollywood film outside of being Mrs. Tom Cruise. And I think this was, from what I gather from the reviews, the first real sort of showcasing her as an actress in her own right.
Yeah, I thought she. I'm not 100% sure. I thought she had been in Dead Calm before this, but maybe it was around. Maybe that came after.
Dead Calm was before, but that was more of an Aussie film.
Oh, right, I see. Yes. Okay. Yeah. It's a re I think it's a really good showcase for her, as just in general. But like, yeah, I wasn't really sure again because I wasn't sure what kind of film it was gonna be at the start. When she was sort of like the wife character, I was like, okay, well, it's early Nicole Kidman. Presumably, she's just going to be like, you know, kind of a not that substantial a part in it, if you know what I mean. Like, there's a lot of films around this time that are sort of similar, where the wife role is kind of thankless. But like, yeah, she really, I thought she, all the sort of facets of her performance, I thought are really good. It's really well judged.
Yeah, she really kind of goes from being, as you say, appearing as almost the love interest to doing something more darker. And you can see why her career carried on. After this, another point I want to make is there's a nice bit of foreshadowing where because she's working in like this almost kindergarten nursery school department that they have in the hospital, I guess with the younger patients, and she stops one of the kids from playing with a plastic bag because he's putting it over his head, and that's a sort of really nice foreshadowing something that happens in the climax. And the script's actually really good like that. There's lots of little moments that you have at the beginning which pay off at the end, and you go, ah, that's a good callback.
Yeah, I don't know. I spotted that as well. But like it's one of those things where I think it's the script is so like it's so bananas and it sort of just goes all over the place. And it's really it is very clever. But then like I feel like the filmmaking kind of lets it down in places because there's stuff like that that's just sort of that's not such an egregious one. But there's a shot that just lingers on that statuette, the
Oh,
Degas one.
yeah.
Goes on forever, and it's like, oh, I wonder if this is going to be important. And there's a few moments where I was watching it the first time through. I was like, okay, well, that's obviously gonna. I'm looking out for that again, and like because there's the dummy,
Oh, yeah. The CPR dummy later on, yeah.
yeah, and there's also just Tobin Bell just turning up
Oh,
for no
yeah.
reason, going away again. I think he'd just been in the firm, so he would have been like kind of
Yeah.
known. Known commodity, and like it that just felt like the bit in is it the Hunt for Red October where there's the random shot of the chef
Oh,
looking
yeah.
confused and it's like it felt very much like that. So like I appreciate what the film was doing, but for me it was like the actual filmmaking was a bit too like ham-fisted for stuff like
Yeah, I
that.
mean,
But yeah, no.
the director of this was Harold Becker, who'd made the Al Pacino thriller Sea of Love. And who later directed his last film was actually the god-awful John Travolta, Vince Vaughn thriller, Domestic Disturbance, which I'm going to be
Oh.
covering probably in a later episode. And yeah, he's a bit of a hack director, if I'm honest.
I've heard The Onion Field is really good, but
Yeah.
I've not seen it. The only film of his that I've seen is Mercury Rising.
Oh, yeah. Oh, did he direct that one? Oh, God, that's awful.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but I've, yeah, so I don't know, I'm maybe not the best person to critique him because I've only seen those two, I've only seen that one film, but I have heard that the Onion Field is really good, but I can't really comment on the
Well, it seems to be a one-off success for him. So Andy and Tracy then bump into Jed in the lift, where he forgets Andy's name, interestingly enough, calls him Alan. And then later on we cut to outside, where Tracy suggests letting out a room in their house so that they can afford to pay for the plumbing, which is apparently awful. And Andy then asks Tracy to have a female friend of theirs drive her home because, again, he's worried about the rapist. The rapist comes up a lot in this early first act, and it really makes you think this is going to be important, and you would expect it to be. But yeah, as we find out, it doesn't. So that night, Andy then sees Tracy being driven home by a man, not a female friend, and she then, when he challenges her on this, she says that the man was her lawyer called Dennis, and that he was helping her sign papers related to her dead mum's estate, and there's also a nice bit where Andy sort of says, "I didn't realise that your mum was so wealthy," which again sort of ties into this whole idea of there being more to Tracy than meets the eye.
Yeah, no, that's a nice bit. That's a nice bit of sort of foreshadowing. I get not quite foreshadowing, but like fleshing it all out. The bit I didn't, I got really, I got my back up quite early on at just how argumentative the two were from quite an early stage, and I was like, what's going on here? Like, because like he's just saying, like, oh, I thought it was going to be a woman dropping you off, and it was a man, and she was like, yeah, and it's like after the scene of them being quite. So having like living in sort of domestic bliss, I thought it was a little bit weird that it sort of immediately went to like them being quite suspicious of each other. But then I think that does sort of play quite well into the later
Yeah.
stuff.
Yeah, it does kind of foreshadow that Nicole Kidman's character isn't quite the innocent person that she appears to be, that she's actually got a kind of more aggressive side underneath. So I think that kind of works as foreshadowing. Speaking of foreshadowing, when they're in bed together, they notice the neighbor kid opposite looking directly at them across the way because their bedroom overlooks his where he's sort of playing on the keyboard, and that kind of the little riff he's playing on the keyboard kind of recurs throughout the film as well.
Yeah.
Yeah,
That's
the,
the
yeah, this kid plays an important part later on in the film.
end.
Lots of foreshadowing here.
Yeah. I think
So,
some of it's good. So I feel like some of the foreshadowing is good and some of it is very clunky, but I think it's sort of like it's about equal parts, I think. It's not terrible.
yeah, I'm not sure if the kid is the inclusion of the kid is clunky, but I mean, for me at least, it works.
Yes.
It's not too bad.
No, I think that's one of the bits that worked for me as well.
So the next morning, Jed drops in on Andy as he's doing DIY and invites him to lunch. And as Andy's getting ready, Jed examines the house where he spots the Degas statue, but we're told that Tracy's dad gave her. Again, another bit of foreshadowing. And this is an interesting detail that's never brought up again, but he also finds a news clipping revealing that Tracy was Andy's former student.
Oh,
Of course,
right.
yeah, there's a little bit where he picks up a news clipping where it's like teacher marries favorite student, and there's a picture of Andy and Tracy together, and it's never brought up again.
Well, I missed
So
that completely.
yeah, it's when he's looking at the Degas statue, there's a little bit. I missed it as well, but the second time watching it, I saw there's a part where he looks at this newspaper clipping, and it's weird how that's never brought up again, because you'd think that would be quite a major factor into their relationship.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Yeah, the main bit I remember from that scene is it's just I feel like it's all just sort of highlighting Alec Baldwin's sort of character at that point. It just seems like quite sort of friendly, but is there he's clearly like got a very, very high opinion of himself, and all the sort of jokes that he makes are sort of very sort of smug, like, oh, I know that you don't, but like, yeah, I did notice the thing about the student.
But speaking of the high opinion thing, because the next scene where he's at the bar, Andy's sort of saying that Tracy's been complaining about abdominal pains and that they're trying to have a kid, and that she's seeing a doctor called Lilienfield about it, and Jed's main response is to say, if it is to immediately recommend that he be the doctor instead of this Lilienfield guy, and that kind of really shows off his ego at this sort of part of the film, that he initially comes across as this doctor who sort of knows everything.
Yeah.
And what's then weird about the next scene is that Andy's kind of a weird guy himself, because not only does he tell Tracy later on that Jed's gonna be their lodger, but he immediately then says that, oh yeah, I talked about all your medical problems,
Yeah.
all your medical problems with him, and he's gonna be your doctor now. And I thought, well, that's a
Yeah,
bit weird.
I have problems with Bill Pullman's character throughout the film a little bit, because he just seems, as soon as Alec Baldwin turns up, he just seems completely like in awe of him. And it's obviously like connected to when they were like at high school, and like Jed was like the popular, was he football, was he
Yeah.
back or something? But like they're like, so there's that dynamic. But like he just doesn't seem to have grown out of it at all, and he's like completely like overawed by him, and I just
Yeah.
find it so weird.
It's weird though, because I don't feel like Bill Pullman really sells that he's in awe of Alec Baldwin in the early scenes together. They just seem like two normal guys talking to each other. And don't get me wrong, I like his performance throughout the rest of the film. I think he's really good at selling the desperation of Andy and what have you, but I feel that if it's meant to be that like Andy's in awe of Jed, which Nicole Kidman just bring up when she's arguing with him about Jed, then I don't know if Alec Baldwin really no if Pullman really sells that.
Yeah, I think I just, I yeah, maybe that I just didn't, I didn't understand what he was doing, why he would do, why he would bring up his wife's stuff with Alec Baldwin, and then why he would just let him move in without discussing it. It just seems so, like, strange.
I guess it's meant to show how charismatic Alec Baldwin is, but
Yeah.
I don't really think Yeah, this is one problem I have with the script. I feel like, and with Baldwin's performance a bit, I think he plays it a little too creepy to come across as that charismatic.
Yeah, no, I think it's a. I mean, to be fair, like with the implication that he's meant to be that, you know, that it turns out to be a red herring, but the idea that maybe he's the killer, maybe that was the direction he was given, is that you have to be sort of likable, but we also have to have that sort of edge where like you might be the killer, you know? So like,
Yeah.
but yeah, I agree. It's a difficult needle for him to thread. But I think for the most part, he does a good job. It's just, yeah, at parts, yeah, it doesn't come across as like the most wholesome person, does he?
Yeah, I mean, I think if I was Andy, I'd be like, okay, let's just put on the brakes a bit
Yeah.
before I start inviting you to be my sort of lodger and to take over my wife's healthcare.
Yeah.
And speaking of Alec Baldwin, right after they have this argument about Jed and she sort of reluctantly agrees, he rings the doorbell and moves in right away.
Yeah, immediately.
Which I guess is supposed to hint that there's something off about the whole thing. And I guess in hindsight, that comes across as obvious. But when you're watching it, it kind of flags up immediately that something's not right in a way which I think is a little too obvious.
Yeah, well, I mean, they really lay it on thick, like right from the start. There's a bit where he's in the lift, where Bill Pullman's in the lift with Nicole Kidman. They talk,
Yeah.
and then his door opens, and he goes, "Oh, speak of the devil." And Alec Baldwin goes, "And the devil will appear." And it's like, "Oh,"
Oh.
and it's like, "Oh," and so it's like not really, it's not very subtle what they're
Yeah, I
trying to
mean,
do.
you have to wonder whether Aaron Sorkin was responsible for that, and maybe somebody should have had a word in his ear, said, to say, actually, Aaron, maybe cut that bit out. It's a little too clunky, you know?
Well, I don't know. I get the sense it's intentional, and it's all sort of like the whole my impression of the film as a sort of whole is that it's trying, as Aaron Sorkin was trying, sort of trying to get you on the audience on the back foot, like the whole way through. It's like, oh, is this a serial killer film? Is it a legal drama? It's like, what sort of film is this, you know? And like, so I feel like putting that stuff in early on is like very clear indicator to the audience that, like, oh, this is a bad guy. You know, and then
Yeah.
like when it gets a bit more complicated than that, it's sort of, yeah, I think that's my take on it anyway. I think it's
Yeah.
very, I feel like it was sort of intentionally quite on the nose.
Yeah. So our next big star makes her appearance as as we cut to Gwyneth Paltrow arguing with Andy in his office about her being late for lectures. And Andy gets the secretary to ring Gwyneth every morning to wake her up, which seems a bit of a, I don't know if I was like a mature university student, whether I would consent to that.
Yeah, and also, like, I'm not sure if I'd consent to it if I was Bill Pullman's secretary. It's like, am I an alarm clock now? Is that what I'm doing?
Yeah, it's a
Like,
bit kind of weird.
yeah.
So it's clearly an excuse to get Bill Pullman over to her house later on, but it's a bit sort of awkwardly done. I mean, yeah, it's just a bit, yeah, it's just kind of very awkwardly kind of written.
Yeah, and it's also an excuse to get to have Tobin Bell appear,
Oh
so you'll
yeah.
know who that is. So brief interaction between him and Gwyneth Paltrow, I think that's what that is.
Yeah, there's yeah,
It's
there's
all a
just
little
a
bit.
Yeah, there's just a very brief moment where they
Oh.
sort of bump into each other, and that's it.
Yeah, it's a little bit clunky. I think for me, I think it would made more sense to have that like at the start of the scene, if you wanted to sort of bury it, like. As it is, it sort of stands out. And if you're watching it, maybe not at the time, maybe not when the film was first out, but when I watched it and that happened, I was like, well, that's going to be important, isn't it? Because I've no idea who Tobin Bell is in the film at this point, you know? And
Yeah.
it just, yeah.
It kind of doesn't help that Tobin Bell is so well known for playing Jigsaw that you're immediately, as soon as you spot him, you're like, ah, okay, you're probably a
That's
wrong'un.
true, but I was watching it with my 90s hat on. I was trying to forget about Saw, but I was st he's still the creepy looking hitman from The Firm, so like he's still creepy like even
Yeah.
back then.
So what we also
But
find
yeah,
out in this scene is that the cop Dana comes in. and in their kind of belligerent conversation together, they have this interesting relationship between Bill Pullman and the cop, where they've got this sort of back and forth that implies that they've known each other in the past, which I kind of like.
Yeah, I like B.B. Newirth a lot.
Yeah.
See from like Cheers and Friends, not Friends, Cheers and Frasier. But like, and I love her in this film. I just she really goes very broad with the sort of New York, is it a New York like Brooklyn accent she's got?
Yeah, it's yeah, because the whole thing's set in the Northeast and you get quite a few of these accents.
Yeah, like I love her sort of no nonsense character. I think the accent is sometimes a bit much in places,
Yeah,
but like,
there's I think there's one moment later on where she's like really talking, like she's doing the accent and you're like, oh, bring it down a bit.
But I do like their dynamic a lot, and I like the sort of they've got really good like chemistry together.
Yeah, and it's where a lot of the dialogue that Sorkin writes really kind of pops off.
It's just it was just like collegiate wit is the bit I remember her saying that's like stood out as like the accent is just like ugh. But
Oh yeah.
yeah, I
But
do think
we
there's a sort of sorry, go on.
no, you say your bit first.
I was just saying I do think there is a sort of I don't know if it's a problem. It's a problem for me in films where like every character kind of talks the same, and it's
Yeah.
like it's a very like Aaron Sorkin's script is very clever and it's very sort of fun. There's a lot of good jokes in it and stuff, but it does get to a point where literally every character speaks in this very quite mannered way, and it doesn't
Yeah.
feel like real people. It feels like Aaron Sorkin talking for everyone, you know? So like, and a lot of the dialogue between between B.B. Newirth and Bill Pullman is sort of symptomatic of that, I think. I think they've got good chemistry, but the dialogue is so like wordy in places. It's like
Yeah.
it's not this people talk.
Well, there's a scene later on with Pullman and another character who I'm not going to spoil, but when he's with that character in her apartment, I'm thinking that character wouldn't talk in that way. That sounds very screenwritery. That sounds like Aaron Sorkin trying to write somebody from that background and kind of failing miserably, which is a shame because the actress playing that character is very well known and very good.
No, yes, I know what you mean.
So in the conversation, we find out that the rapist cuts off bits of his victim's hair, which will be important later on. So we then go to Tracy having an abdominal attack in her bathroom, and as she's about to take her meds, Jed walks in on her, and they have a brief kind of moment together where she sort of goes off at him for scaring her, and they briefly stare each other down, stare each other down until Andy comes back. Which again, important foreshadowing, which I think actually works. That's a nice little non-verbal moment between the two.
Yes, I was going to say this is the after all of my trash talk about the sort of the lingering shots of stuff earlier on. I think this is a scene that works really well. If you don't know what's going, if you haven't seen the film before, it's very sort of like it's full of tension. Like what is going on here? Like because you know that he's sort of a Jack the Lad, and like you know that something, and so it's kind of there's that sort of tension when you know what's happening, it works. Because obviously we're going to go into spoilers later, but it's sort of like, yeah, it works from both angles. For me, it felt like a really sort of it's a good scene.
Yeah, it's one of the interesting examples where it's not like the dialogue from earlier on, which is kind of giving very sort of clunky foreshadowing. This actually sort of provides foreshadowing in a very sort of eloquent visual way, which is one of the rare examples of thing where Harold Becker does better than Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah, he makes the right call, I think. And I think that because obviously Nicole Kidman seems quite hostile to Alec Baldwin, and it makes perfect sense because she doesn't like him at this point. She doesn't like him, and he's come into the bathroom. Then later on, it makes sense for a completely different reason. So like, yeah, I thought it was it was a neat little scene. I think one of the few scenes you get in the first half with just without Bill Pullman in that house.
Because the first half of the film is very much Pullman heavy. It's focusing on him and dealing with the sort of the dealing with the serial rapist and the college stuff. And Yeah, this is one of the only scenes that sort of hints at these two characters being more important. And the next morning, Gwyneth hasn't arrived on time, so Andy goes to her house to wake her up, which again, that's overstepping the boundaries, isn't it, for a college professor?
He's weird. He's a weird guy.
Yeah, because he's meant to be quite normal. He's presented as being like the most normal character in the film, but some of the stuff he does is really inexplicable.
So early on, like obviously he's presented as sort of like the everyman and sort of the audience identification character, but he's still acting weird. So like when I don't know where I got the impression there was going to be a twist. It might have been in that article I read. And I was like, so watching it at this point, I was like, well, he's probably the killer then. Because I was like, why is he acting so weird? Why is he going to our house? Why is he doing this? And like, so yeah, I don't know what he, I don't know if he's intentional or not, but he's a weird guy.
Yeah, because he so a loose piece of Gwyneth's hair leads him to the garden where he finds her mutilated body, and that's Gwyneth Paltrow out of the film and the second film she's in where she's killed by a serial killer.
It's a nasty little it's a nasty shot as well, isn't it, of when he finds her body. It's like
Yeah.
no, I mean it's effective, but then it's a weird there's a weird cut and it cuts back to the same identical shot, which I found a bit jarring, but
Yeah,
maybe again.
it cuts to like the guy taking the one of the crime scene photographers taking a picture of her in the garden at night. It seems like a lot of time has passed between Andy finding a body and calling the cops, which seemed a bit weird. I guess that's meant to be maybe a red herring, maybe suggesting that Andy had something to do with it. I don't know. Well, no, it clearly isn't. But you don't know it, the way it's presented in the film either seems like they're trying to go for that or a continuity error. It's hard to work out why there's so much passage of time. But we then sort of go from that to Jed joking about corpses with Andy in the bar, which and Andy doesn't see the funny side. But then we go to another interesting point, which sort of goes into the film's real plot. Where Andy makes a joke about giving his right arm for $1 million, and Jed seeming to take him literally and saying, well, what about if you didn't have to give your arm? What about if you just give a finger, cut off your finger for $1 million? Would you do it? And Alec Baldwin does a really good job of sort of giving the leading Bill Pullman on to think he would really do it, and then at the last minute saying, oh no, I was joking. That's really good. Again, a really good example, a good example of his performance giving effective foreshadowing.
Yeah, I agree. I think I really like that scene. I really like Alec Baldwin is sort of really sort of disarming at the start when he's talk joking about seeing a dead body. It just sort of feels like he's not, you know, he's it feels entirely in character because he's presented as a sort of very self-interested, self-obsessed character. So he wouldn't, he's not actually, he's not thinking about Bill Pullman's feelings at that
No.
point. Yeah, then he brings this that stuff up about selling your arm. And yeah, obviously links into the film's themes towards the end. But yeah, I really enjoyed the sort of interplay between those two.
I mean, it hints at not only him being dark, but it also sort of implies that he might be the rapist, whilst also concealing what his, whilst also providing hints to what his true nature is with the 1 million being referred to, which. Yeah, I just think it's really well done all around. So the next day, Andy's met at home by Deborah, who says that he's the suspected rapist, which isn't a surprise given his behaviour.
Well, I mean, I just find it amazing that he seems so surprised by that. Like, he, of course you're a suspect. Like,
Yeah.
why is this a shock?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe don't be so involved with the students' lives, Andy.
Because it seemed like, because I again when I first I didn't know anything about this when I first watched it, and I watched it assuming that got to this point. I was like, well, what if he's the rapist slash killer? And I was like, well, they haven't, the fact they haven't even suspect haven't even got him down as a suspect yet, that makes me suspicious that he's probably the killer, you know? Because films in the in the 90s when they sort of would like, oh, I don't know. But yeah, so when they finally interviewed him, and he's all like shocked that he might be a suspect. I was like, of course you're a suspect. You're like the head of the university, the head of the campus. Of course it's going to happen.
And she then asks him to give a sperm sample, which will prove to be the most important part of that scene, that sperm sample, in a
Yeah.
way which you will not expect.
The most important part of the whole serial rapist
Yeah,
subplot.
exactly. It's like, yeah, it's like the whole plot was just for that.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a such a yeah, no, I mean, yes, it feels like that whole segment of the film is just a big misdirect. And it, I mean, and it works, but yeah, the whole point of it is to just have that happen, isn't it?
Yeah, and now this is where the plot starts to change, where Tracy collapses at home with the when her abdominal pains get really bad. Jed is sort of still at the bar and playing darts with some girls when he gets beat to go to the hospital. And Andy's at the police station and he gets told that Tracy's been rushed to hospital. And before Jed performs surgery, he's told that Tracy is 4 weeks pregnant, but that the fetus is going to abort as a result of the procedure. Jed then pauses, which is another bit of meaningful foreshadowing before going ahead. And he then discovers that after removing one of Tracy's ovaries, because one of the ovaries we later found out was had a cyst growing on top of it, that the second ovary is her second ovary is also necrotic. It's basically dying. And whilst the other surgeons are saying that they need to run tests on this to find out whether this ovary is actually dying, Jed decides to just go ahead and remove it because he's super smart. He's the surgeon, he's the number one surgeon. And before he goes ahead and does this, he goes and tells Andy all about this. And he says that Tracy won't be able to have kids anymore after he's taken out both ovaries.
Yeah. It's the yeah, go on,
Yeah,
sorry.
no, you go ahead.
I was gonna say I love Bill Pullman's performance in that little bit is really good. And Alec Baldwin, but Alec Baldwin's a little bit more, is weirdly, considering the performance he's given up to this point, he's gives a more he's more subtle, because it takes to the end of the film for you to work out what he's doing there, really, performance wise. But that Bill Pullman, like, there's a scene later on where he goes, where he sort of explains it in more detail. But like, he looks the look on his face when he finds out that she's pregnant, is just like completely overjoyed, and then like just de absolutely devastated after. I thought that's a really he did really well there. Like,
Yeah.
I really bought, yeah.
Yeah, he's really good at showing the devastation of the character of Andy and what he's, you know, the character's been really put through the mill in terms of being jerked around this way and that way. And yeah, again, his performance in that scene, I think, is his best in the film.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think he. There's a scene later on where he says that was his fate. That was the happiest moment of his life. I don't think he necessarily needed that later scene. Like, I think he sort of is. It's he it does it. He does all the work there. Like, you see it. You don't need to then talk about it after. But yeah.
Yeah, but also I like the little look that Bald the little pause Baldwin makes when he's about to perform surgery on Kidman, knowing that she's pregnant, because as a later twist reveals, the baby, the identity, he may have close links to the identity of that baby. And I thought there was a nice little touch that he added there.
Yeah.
So despite protests from the surgeon, from the other surgeon that he was arguing with at the beginning of the film, Jed removes both ovaries. And the next morning, and this is weird because when this senior doctor tells Alec Baldwin that the second ovary he removed, that they'd run tests on it and it didn't need to be removed as it was healthy, Baldwin is watching an anime on the TV.
Yeah. It's very weird choices in this film, aren't there?
Yeah, why is he watching this tentacle anime like as a middle age as a 30 something year old doctor in the early 90s?
Yeah, I don't know. we'd have to ask Harold Becker what's going on
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, he's like 90 odd years old and probably doesn't remember what he had for breakfast yesterday. So yeah, so the doctor tells Jed that the report that says that the ovary was healthy has to be destroyed to protect the hospital. Jed says he'll take the blame for removing it, as he, again, the God com this is where we first get a sense of this God complex, that where he insists he did absolutely nothing wrong. But then when he visits Tracy, who's recovering, she says she's going to sue him for every penny for what he did to her. So yeah, this is kind of where we're starting to move away from the rapist plot line now into what is the actual plot line of this film, which is this scenario that results from the procedure. What did you think was happening at this point?
I don't know. I was completely wrong-footed by it again, but like I think I don't know. I mean, without going into details, what happens? I from the very early point, I was like, I didn't really get what Nicole Kidman was doing in terms of like she seems to be quite sort of quite brusque with everyone and quite short-tempered, and this bit where Alec Baldwin goes to see her and then she's immediately talking. Like suing him, it didn't quite ring true to me. I'm like, do we not see like the sort of the grieving part of it, the fact that she can't have kids? It just immediately like I'm going to sue you. That struck me as a little bit weird, like as a little bit of a sort of I felt like there's a scene missed. I felt like there was a scene missing between her and Bill Pullman, maybe, which could have been nice. But yeah, it sort of shifts into sort of like a malpractice suit type film, which. Again, didn't see it coming, but I was like, okay, this is good. This is interesting. Like, it's sort of keeping the audience on their toes, like what kind of film this is.
Yeah, because it's almost like the rapist plot has now almost been completely forgotten about until one scene later on. We're now moving into this sort of trial of Jed,
Because when,
where,
yeah, also when I saw the trailer, I assumed that without, I assumed that Nicole Kidman would end up being like, a target of the killer that from watching the you know from this is a film about a serial rapist and killer with Nicole Kidman as the main character. Surely that's going to be a plot point at some point, but it's just they're just sort of running parallel. They never sort of they don't actually cross that much at all. It's very strange.
Because there's not much tying them together at all. So we go to after a scene where Jed's been told that by his lawyer that Nicole Kidman's character is this innocent sort of victim, and that as a result of that, he's if he loses, he's going to lose hard. We then cut to the trial where, despite the protests from his mentor, played by George C. Scott, another big role. Where he sort of denies mentioning that Jed has a sort of God complex, where he feels that he knows all. Jed completely overrules him and goes on this big long speech where he says, I am God. When it comes down to the surgery, surgical procedures in my surgical department, I am God here. He goes on this lengthy speech, which is. It's the one part of the film that, as we said early on, was quoted in 30 Rock, and it's the one part of the film that you see being quoted on Twitter. It's a great speech delivered by Alec Baldwin, but it is the moment that absolutely, that theoretically in an ordinary movie would completely sink his character and come right at the end of the film.
No, I mean, I love that scene. I was like, it's weird. I think this was a year after Glengarry Glen Ross, and where he also had that massive speech that he did, the always be closing scene. And it feels like he's almost that Aaron Sorkin's almost trying to one up that. But I think it also it's a nice parallel to A Few Good Men as well. Because like, you know, the big speech in A Few Good Men, which is you know, the you want me on that wall, you need me on that wall. It's like he's obviously sinking his case because he's coming across terribly, but the point he's making is a legit point. You know, he's in that room, his cool is so I thought it was a really good scene, a really good character moment. It's a brilliant speech. And yeah, the only thing that annoyed me about the scene is that poor George C. Scott. So that's his one scene in the film, and he's a great
Yeah.
actor, and he just gets completely swept aside
Oh,
by the.
completely.
And like, I love George C. Scott, and I was kind of excited to see him do more in the film, and that's it. He's after this film, he's just not in it. After the scene, he's not in it anymore.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised they gave him that part because it's not really that big a part and it doesn't really give him much of a chance to show off as an actor because, again, if you've seen George C. Scott in other films, you'll know he's very intense, like Anatomy of a Murder, Exorcist III, and this part is kind of a fairly average role.
I feel like it's a case of they needed someone with a certain gravitas to play the role rather than trying to appeal, trying to entice an actor with a good role, you know? It's that they needed someone with a certain stature. But yeah, I think it was a little bit wasted because I loved Exorcist ex him in Exorcist 3 as well.
Yeah,
I thought it was a great
he's like screaming and yelling all the time in that film. It's
time. Yeah,
and
he
it,
doesn't get to shout at all in this.
yeah, he's like so downplayed. It's like, did they catch him on an off day?
I think no. To be fair, I think he's
Yeah,
great, but he just doesn't get
he
enough to
is.
do because he does. There's some of the line deliveries he gives are really nice, and like he's got such a good voice, but like it's just that he's not. He's literally his whole role is just in that one scene, sat in a chair, and that's it.
Yeah. So what have so as Alec Baldwin so as Alec Baldwin sinks the case, or Jed rather sinks the case, Tracy wins a settlement of 20 million, which she initially doesn't seem happy about, obviously given what she's gone through. But then we go back to the rapist plot line. The final scene in the rapist plot line where Andy is working late is such a jarring cut as well from like the resolution of this trial scene
Yeah.
to the college. It's like we're going from one movie to another movie. It's very jarring. Andy's working late when the lights go out, and he goes down to the basement to the janitor's room, where he finds the janitor's living down there. He finds hairs underneath the janitor's pillow, and then the janitor, played by Tobin Bell, dun dun dun, pops up, and he gives a weak excuse that they're his late mother's hairs, which I'm not sure whether Andy buys that or not.
No, I don't think he does.
Does he?
It's very. I don't think so.
Because he's leave, but he does actually leave at one point. He does then seem to accept it and leaves, and he doesn't seem to be like massively suspicious.
It's a strange. Again, I thought that it's a strange scene, isn't it? Because the conventional scene would be he see that he finds the thing, and the guy immediately attacks him for seeing it.
Yeah.
But they've got that weird the weird dialogue between the two where he sort of tries to make excuses for it. He goes, "Oh, I'm just here for a light bulb," and they just sort of walk out, and then he attacks him, which I don't know. It seemed a bit. I read it as he is still suspicious, but he's sort of playing it down in front of Tobin Bell to
Yeah,
sort of get out of it,
I
which
guess
makes
so.
sense. But then like, he doesn't. He just sort of hangs about outside for a bit, doesn't he? He doesn't like immediately leave.
Yeah, but like it's not like he's lying in wait for Tobin Bell. He just sort of pauses a bit, just like, oh, okay, what's going on here? What am I doing? You know, it comes across
I
more
really
like
feel like,
compute. Yeah, sorry.
yeah, I feel like I just like, let's just wrap this up now. Let's just, we've done
Yeah.
this point, it served its purpose. Let's just end this plot. But
Yes.
yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, yeah, let's just wrap up the serial killer bit now, because as we said, Tobin Bell tries to strangle Andy and a fight ensues where Andy knocks him out, and that's basically it. That's the serial killer plot done, really. Tobin Bell did it. And that's
Yeah,
it. We don't get any
surprise.
follow-up. We don't get any follow-up, whatever. We cut to the police station right afterwards, where Dana, Bebe Neuwirth, seems to agree that, yeah, that's it. Tobin Bell did it. We don't even get any dialogue in saying that he's the one that did it. It just seems to be implied.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's the whole. It seems like just a complete afterthought. This whole thing now, it's so
Yeah.
strange.
But it's just like this would be the conventional ending of if this is a thriller, this would everything would be building up to this one scene and it would be so dragged out. Yet here it is in basically like the middle of the film or just before the third act, and it's dealt with so briefly, and it's like when this scene crops up, it's like, what's happening?
Yeah.
And then it then makes the scene afterwards where he's talking with Bebe Neuwirth in the police station kind of hard to follow, because you're like, okay, this is it now. The rapist part has that all been dealt with.
Yeah. But then this scene does serve a purpose as well. It reveals the whole reason for the rapist subplot.
Yeah, that basically, well, we don't actually find out in the scene itself, because Bebe Neuwirth has this very roundabout Aaron Sorkin-y dialogue, which I don't think works in this scene, where she goes, oh, my brothers say I talk too much and takes a while to get to the point, only to have the, and it only seems to be to prolong the revelation to the next scene. Oh, and also, just before we go to the next scene, we find a CPR dummy in the police station. We linger on that, which I
Yeah.
find a little clunky.
Yeah, I find that very clunky.
Yeah, well, gosh, why are we, why are, how, why is Harold Becker keeping so much focus on this random CPR dummy? I wonder what purpose it will serve.
Yeah, that's what I mean about the filmmaking sort of letting down the plotting at some places, because I feel like, yeah, that's there's no reason to hold on that dummy at all.
Yeah, also speaking of clunky filmmaking, I thought the music that played when Tobin Bell was strangling Bill Pullman was very sort of clunky. It was like dur, 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 dun dun dun, kind of very thrillery music.
Yeah, I'm not going to defend the music.
No, the musical score can get very clunky at points. So after the scene with is it I think it's Dan is her name. Andy goes to a hotel where Jed's staying at and tells him that Tracy conned both of them, as his sperm sample revealed that he is sterile and can't be the father of Tracy's baby, and that she's not as holy than thou as she appears to be. And so as a result of that, she probably, yeah, so as a result of that, she probably was conning, was sort of conning Jed, which I don't know, his logic seems a bit flawed here.
Yeah, I think this is a point where, like, up to now, I feel like the audience have been completely behind, like, not being able to predict what's happening. But I feel like that from this point on, it gets, especially without Baldwin's involvement, you start to sort of go, like, well, yeah, I can sort of see where this is going a little bit, you know? But yeah, I find it funny in films like this where something like this happens and the wronged partner, like, immediately gets incredibly vindictive and very angry, and it's like, and like she, without actually, because it's a relationship, like they've been, I can't remember how long they're supposed to have been together in this, but they've been supposed to have been together for a while, and
Yeah.
instead of getting sad that his partner's like done this thing, he just immediately goes, well, I didn't get anything, this isn't fair, and it doesn't seem like that's not how a real person would react, you know, because
Yeah, it's.
Alec Baldwin's got a big speech. Yeah, sorry, go on.
Yeah, it seems to be very third act. It seems to be like, oh, we need to get the third act going. Let's just have them immediately be suspicious and suspicious
Yeah.
and turning against sort of Tracy, when the character beforehand is being presented as being not volatile at all and being very sort of normal guy, and this seems to almost come a bit out of nowhere.
Yeah, I agreed.
So yeah, but Alec Baldwin sort of says, you know, as Jed says, no, actually, I don't want to sue, to counter sue Tracy. I got what I deserved. But Andy still wants to track down Tracy, so he visits her lawyer, Dennis. Demanding to know where Tracy's whereabouts are, which seems again a bit weird. Would her lawyer really know where she was?
No, but I quite like the, I like this scene.
Yeah, where he's,
Again,
oh
because
yeah. Yeah,
it's
where
Peter
he.
Pan. He's great. I liked so again, it's like every sort of 90s actor seems to be in this film, because he's really great at sort of in his early scene. Again, I think it's a bit of a misdirect, because in the early scenes he seems like he's either going to be the father of the baby, or sleeping with her, or just a sort of scuzzy lawyer. And in this scene, he sort of shows he's actually kind of decent. Like, he's not he doesn't condone what she's done, because he sort of gives hints to Andy about where to sort of where he can go to sort of learn more, even if Andy doesn't really pick up on it at first. He does sort of like
Yeah.
he does sort of let leave a sort of trail of breadcrumbs for him, which I quite liked.
What it just shows is that the character of Andy is a little dense, because in this scene and in a later scene, the characters have to really spell out to him what he
Yeah.
needs to do, which is kind of surprising for a guy who works in a university. He comes across as not just not streetwise, but just not very quick in the uptake in general.
Yeah. And I really like the little touch when Peter Gallagher's like take a bottle of scotch. It's like it's a nice little not telling you what to do. I'm not telling I'm not
Yeah.
getting trained client attorney privilege, but I can give you this little pointer. And so I thought that was a nice scene, even if Andy is completely dense.
Yeah, well,
Doesn't pick up on anything.
we get this in the next scene, but the reason why he's giving him the telling him to give the bottle of scotch is because Andy finds out that Tracy's mother is alive. Because the lawyer Dennis didn't know that Andy that Tracy had lied about her being dead. And so Andy then visits Tracy's mother, played by another famous actress, Anne Bancroft, who
Yeah.
people will know best from her role as Mrs. Robinson in The Graduate.
Yeah. And she's great.
She's great. She's great in the role, but I don't like how this character is written. I feel like this character is written by somebody who's never met somebody who's like a working class alcoholic person.
No, I agree. And yeah, before I get into that though, I did not recognize her at all, like when the door opened. It's only when she was sat down, she sort of did that slight smile. I was like, "Oh my God, it's Anne Bancroft." I figured I knew she was in it because I saw her name in the opening titles. But like it's so. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I've got like face blindness now. But I
No.
did not recognize her from.
No, I'm the same at all. I'm the same as well. I mean, mind you, it's like 25 years since The Graduate, so she's obviously aged a
Well,
lot.
yeah.
But she's great in really portraying this kind of cynical, sarcastic edge to this character. Kind of not just playing her as this scuzzy alcoholic, but giving her a sense of humor and implying that there's more dimensions to her than what even the script is giving her, which I think is the same with Baldwin. It's again a great actor, sort of, or actress rather, really adding something to that character.
Yeah, but I also agree that with what you said, that it does feel like it's a great showcase for Anne Bancroft. At times it feels a little bit like this is going to be the best supporting actress scene, you know, like
Yeah.
was a little bit a tiny bit awards baity, but then like it gets it also feels just very written and like very sort of like on the nose. Oh, she's going to do a card trick. Oh, great. You know, like
Yeah.
again, I don't think real people talk like that,
I
but
mean,
then again, but I love that final line where she's like, "Whether well, why have I got the jack of clubs in my pocket?" Like, I love
yeah, oh,
that. So
that's
maybe I'm just,
great.
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but what the overwritten dialogue does mean is that she, much like the cop earlier, she just kind of danced around the point a bit in
Yeah.
terms of giving Andy the full story. But then again, Andy doesn't seem to pick up on a lot of what she's saying, which does kind of drags out the scene a bit. But basically, what Tracy's mother tells Andy is that Tracy was very close to a con man father and learned a lot from him, that she's trying to kind of milk Andy for money the same way that she tried with a rich billionaire who she tried to marry, but he didn't take her up on the offer. So she then went to work for this doctor called Lilienfeld, and then ran off with him st and stole money from the clinic. And we then get a sort of resolution to the Dagar thing, where Andy sees the same Dagar statue in the mother's house that he and Tracy owned, but then he finds out that that's just a cheap knockoff that you can get anywhere. So
Yeah,
basically,
again.
Tracy's a con artist who's been playing Andy.
But yeah, again, that's more demonstrating how dense Andy is, because like it's a very famous sculpture, that one. Like why would you just assume that's the exact same one? It's very it's strange from him.
Yeah,
But
you'd think, I mean, for a college professor, he's not written as being very intelligent. You almost wonder if that part of the script was written later on, that whole part with the college, about that
yeah.
part with the serial killer being on camp, the serial rapist being on campus. That almost feels like an afterthought because a lot of Andy's behavior doesn't seem to suggest that of a well-educated man.
No, I mean, I think with the script, the I think it's everyone. I think it's just Alec Baldwin, isn't it? And Jed is like some is the much more appealing role. He gets all the best lines. I think maybe Andy was sort of forgotten about a little bit in terms of the actual character.
Because which is a shame, because I think Bill Pullman does a really good job sort of with Andy's desperation in this in these kind of scenes and his sort of confusion and anger at finding out all the stuff about Tracy, but he's not given us much to work with.
No, like I love the bit where he says that, oh, she's always loved kids, and Anne Bancroft just like laughs in his face. I just love that bit. I
Yeah,
think it's funny. Still
just
picked up what's going on.
the fact he's so naive.
Yeah.
So eventually, so Andy then realizes that Tracy's with Dr. Lilienfield and tracks him down, where he finds out that where he breaks into the house and he sees Tracy return with Lilienfield, who is Dun 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 Jed, which is a nice twist, but I think it's one you could maybe see coming.
I think it's a little bit about the execution, because like I think it is a nice twist, but like once you sort of get that Tracy's not on the up and up, you start to look around at the other characters, and like it does seem quite obvious that Alec Baldwin's going to be the guy. But like if it had happened a bit, like if it had been a bit more slick, or a bit of if it got cut to the chase a bit faster, then it could have been a big shock, you know. I think it's a lot to do with the sort of the execution being not
Kind of
quite.
also feel like maybe not mentioning Lilienfield's name so much because his name comes up quite a few times in dialogue earlier on. I think maybe the hints at the fact that he's a prominent character going to be a prominent character. I think if they maybe not mentioned his name so much, it would have come
Yes.
across as a bit more of a surprise.
Yeah. Agreed.
And it's also where Alec Baldwin's performance just kind of fall down as he does sort of play up on the smug, egotistical elements of Jed a bit too much, so you sort of think, aha, you're definitely going to be a wrong un in some way down the line. Whereas I feel like had he been a bit more subtle with it, there would have been a little more room for a surprise.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I really like I really again I really enjoyed Alec Baldwin's performance. I thought the big speech was sort of a good summing up of his character at that point, where I thought
Yeah.
like he's not a nice guy, but he knows what he's doing. And so from after that point, that scene weirdly made me like his character a lot more than I had up to that point. So I sort of went the other way, where I was like, I'm sort of on board with this character now. So it was a little bit more of a surprise. But again, like the previous scene with him and Andy sort of made me think that maybe he was more involved, if that makes
Yeah,
sense.
yeah,
Sort
yeah.
of.
So what happens is that after discovering the whole betrayal, Andy goes home and throws Tracy's stuff off the table. Bill Pullman's acting, by the way, when he finds out that about Jed's real identity and his relationship with Tracy, that's really well done. I mean, this is Bill Pullman's first major role. And he kind of really pulls out all the stops. This is sort of like his major starring role. His first major
Yeah.
starring role, rather.
Yeah, the blocking of that scene is a bit weird though, isn't it? Because it seems like they're all a lot closer than they probably were, but it seems like he's right in the room with them, well, that's
Yeah.
they should be able to see him.
Yeah. It almost feels like if Nicole Kidman just looks up just a little bit, she'll catch him.
Yeah, that seemed a bit but yes, no, I think his performance is great. Like I think yeah, considering that how early this is in his career, like really good.
Yeah, this is pre-ID4, all that stuff. So he goes home and chucks Tracy's stuff off the table, where he then uncovers a syringe filled with a mysterious substance, and then notices again the neighbor watching him from the neighbor kid watching him from across the way. So now, when he finds the syringe, I thought, oh God, this is just going into like I don't know, almost science fiction territory. What's going on here?
Yeah, I didn't really know what to make of the syringe when it first appeared.
Yeah.
But I sort of think that was almost the point. I think this is almost meant to be like this is because obviously from now on it's sort of like he's it's his it's more about Andy.
Yeah.
Sort of up to this point, it's sort of been Tracy and Jake were sort of working behind the scenes, and he's been the one who I don't know what's going on. And from this point, it's sort of he's the one who's sort of scheming now. So I thought this is sort of like just a little clue as to what where he's gonna go, where he's planning, where
Yeah.
he's plotting, without giving anything away. So I just I was I saw the needle. I was like, I'm just gonna go with it. I'm
Yeah, I
not
was the
gonna
same. I'm like no idea where this is going to go, but it just showed that Bill Pullman's now in the driving seat. He because beforehand he was more of a passive, reactive character. Now he's a bit more. Now he's more proactive, and he becomes kind of the central focus now. Not the rapist. Not Jed and Tracy. It's now Andy. Andy's now kind of making the plot go.
Yeah.
So we then cut to Jed and Tracy walking on the beach, and the dialogue that they have is very Sorkin-y.
I
But I
love
like
that.
it. I like it. This is my favorite dialogue exchange in the film.
Yeah. I loved it. I love how I love how petty he gets for no reason. He's just like whom?
Yes, not
Whom?
who. And it's like what?
He didn't say anything. He wrote it. It's like, oh, my God, just okay. Just calm down.
Yeah, it kind of adds a really funny edge to like Baldwin's character being like a narcissist, and it's something that like in a more conventional film you'd cut it because you'd play it completely straight. You'd
Yeah.
play that scene with them talking completely like serious, and have them be more like you'd have it be more about them scheming, and you'd play it dead straight. But I like the dark humor that Sorkin adds.
Yeah. Well, it's like any sort of, if, I think, if you think of like the worst sort of whodunit you've ever seen, it's always like everyone's sort of chatty, 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 and then like when they're revealed to be the villain, suddenly they go completely evil, you know? And this one doesn't do that. It's like they're still people. They've still got like the sort of, they're still quite sort of quirky characters. I hate the word quirky, sorry, I don't know why I said that. But yeah, I like that they don't, Sorkin doesn't lose sight of who the characters are, even when all the cards are on the table, sort of thing.
Yeah, because Jed's still showing his ego, his egotism by getting worked up over the his Kessler not apologizing enough to him, and Tracy's sounding as optimistic as she did in the in her first scene where she was talking with Andy. The way she's talking about getting the money is the same way she's talking to Andy about the plumbing in the beginning, in their
Yes.
beginning scene together. And I thought that was very nice, sort of the way it kind of bookends.
Yeah.
She's talking the same way, but it's in a completely different context. She's not this suddenly evil person.
Yeah, exactly. And it sort of makes all that her sort of impatience all early on, it all sort of makes sense. You know, the fact that Bill Pullman was like she was getting snotty with Bill Pullman because he saw that the guy that it was a guy dropping her off, not a woman. And it's like, if of course she's going to get her back up if she thinks he's like looking into her, sort of thing. And
Yeah.
if she finds if he's deep, he'll find all about all her past history and stuff. So I liked in retrospect, I was what because I thought that was a negative at first when I first watched it. I was like, this character is really unlikable sort of early on,
Yeah.
and then I was like, okay, no, that makes sense.
So all the script stuff kind of all the foreshadowing at the beginning sort of adds up in the end. It kind of
Yeah.
ties everything. It kind of all adds up kind of quite neatly, I feel, in a way which it wouldn't if it was somebody other than Aaron Sorkin writing. So Jed and Tracy then go back to the house and start having sex, only for Tracy to be pricked in the back by the syringe. And
Yeah,
they
and that's quite
realize,
funny.
yeah, they realize that Andy's onto them. And Tracy then says that she'll deal with Andy. And a nice touch is that Jed then says to Tracy, "You weren't supposed to get pregnant," because that was what would lead to Andy being suspicious, which I don't know what to make of this, because it sort of implies that one, he wasn't the father of the baby, Jed, and two, how would they That almost implies that they were anticipating that Andy was going to find out he was sterile.
Well, I thought the there wasn't I thought the baby definitely wasn't planned, but I thought, like, I don't know, he wouldn't have. Hang on, let me think. I had explained it away. I don't know why I'd explained it away now. Oh yeah, because he wouldn't have found. I mean, they would have to know he was sterile, which is strange, but also that if there wasn't a, if the baby wasn't there, then they would never would have found out he was sterile anyway, right?
Yeah, but the only reason why they found out he was sterile was because of the semen sample that the cop took, because they thought he was the rapist. That had nothing to do with Nicole Kidman having her ovaries taken out.
No, it's weird. Mm.
Yeah, that's a bit of a plot hole there. But it does also seem to imply that the baby wasn't Alec Baldwin's, whereas at the beginning, whereas in the scene where he's about to cut her up, he pauses, and I thought that's because he knows that the baby was his.
Yeah. I don't know. I assumed it was his, and that he, that like, and yeah, that was why he why he paused, but I don't know.
But yeah, in the conversation, he's like, "You weren't supposed to get pregnant," so implying that he wasn't the father, because otherwise he wouldn't be talking to her like that.
Yeah, I think it's a plot hole.
Yeah. Either that, or maybe he's blaming her for not using protection.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe it, and we're maybe not picking up on that. I don't know. So
Potentially.
anyway, next scene. Tracy talk goes meets up with Andy at a restaurant where she gets very seductive with him in a kind of really poor attempt to get him on board.
Yeah.
But Andy rejects him, which is but no, but Andy rejects her, which is quite funny.
I like it. You've dropped your shoe. I like
Yeah,
that.
because she's like rubbing up against his leg, trying to play footsie with him, and he's like, "Nah, enough playtime."
And wait,
Yeah,
and the waitress is Anne Cusack,
yeah,
is John Cusack and Joan Cusack's sister, I think.
yeah. Is she like the lesser known Cusack?
I mean, she is lesser known, but she's established as her own in her own right, because she was in like A League of Her Own.
All right.
I think she was in the Boys recently. I think she's Starlight's mum in The Boys.
Oh,
Like,
okay.
she's been in lots of, I was like, and she gets one big close up, and I was like, oh, that's a Cusack. I don't
Yeah,
know which Cusack it is. Cusack. But
yeah,
yeah.
yeah. Because the only two I know are like John and Joan. So when I saw the name in the credits, I was like, oh wait, there's a third one.
Yeah, well, I think there's more. I
Oh
think in
really? Oh God.
Gross Point Blank, in Gross Point Blank, there's a lot of Cusacks in the film. So
Oh,
I
okay.
think that's the main thing they are. But
So
yeah.
there's like a whole bunch of Cusacks out there with acting careers that we have nothing, but we have no knowledge of.
Yeah.
So Andy reveals that what was in the syringe was a fertility drug that can produce ovarian cysts, and he also demands half of the money, and mentions that the neighbor kid across the way will serve as a witness if anything's done to him. Which freaks Tracy out to the point where she smashes her wine glass. And I really like Pullman's performance in this. You can really see he's in control now, where he tells Tracy to sit the fuck down.
Yeah, it reminded me, like, I don't know if you've seen it, the Steven Soderbergh film Side Effects. Have you seen that
Yes,
film?
I have. Yeah, if that's got a similar twist.
Yeah, but it, yeah, it and but just the twist is similar, but also the whole the shifting of the dynamic in the second half of the film, the way in that film where Jude Law is like he's sort of the he's framed everything's on him in the first half, and then in the second half he sort of gets control and he's like pulling the strings. It
Yeah.
really remind that this reminds me of that, the way that Bill Pullman's performance, especially the way he sort of sat there, he's like he's fully in control, he knows what he's got, his plan. Yeah, I really like Side Effects as well.
Yeah,
But like, yeah,
it's
I really.
you wonder if Soderbergh was inspired by Malice, because I know he gets a lot of cultural influences from interesting places, and you wonder if he was maybe one of the few other people who really liked Malice. And was like, oh, I'm
Yeah.
going to kind of use that plot structure.
I feel like Side Effects is probably a more successful film overall. But yeah, I do think there's definitely, I mean, I mean, it's very different in a
Oh,
lot
yeah.
of sort of the beats of it feel very similar. So and he's very cine literate, so I imagine he probably would have seen it.
Although, unlike this film, he remembered not to include an almost completely pointless serial killer plot.
Yes, no, yeah, maybe side effects would have been improved with a serial killer
Oh,
subplot,
yeah.
but I'm not.
Yeah. Like Jude Law has to fight off a random serial killer just midway through the film.
Yeah.
So back to Doctor in quotation marks Lillianfield's house, where Jed tells Tracy to give Andy his share. Tracy says no, and wants Jed's help in to kill the one witness they have, a 10-year-old boy. Jed refuses and threatens to testify against Tracy if anything happens, and Tracy then reveals how far she's willing to go by shooting Jed twice and killing him. And I like this twist, as it reveals that there's another side to Baldwin's character where he won't go that far, where even he has his limits.
That's sort of, this is a scene I was sort of alluding to when I said that, like, he's sort of the most likable character in it, because like he's got a set of morals. Like he won't kill like an innocent kid, and also he's a pragmatist, and he's like, yeah, let's just pay him and go. Like, what's the problem? Like, he's not greedy, he just wants what he's got, and then like just wants to move on.
Is he really the most likable character, though? Because given the fact that he's
I mean,
egocentric and was willing to perform unnecessary surgery, I don't know.
So, I don't mean like likable as in I want to be friends with him. I mean, like, in the terms of the film, I like he feels like the most interesting, but most interesting, maybe most
Yeah.
nuanced character. Because like
Yeah.
I don't enjoy Bill. I like Bill Pullman in it a lot, but his character just rubs me up the wrong way for so much of the film.
I think it's fingers the fact he's quite dense throughout the film, and
Yeah.
has to be told stuff explicitly, despite being a college professor.
Yeah. But like, but just with the whole, he's got like the fact that Alec Baldwin's character's got scruples, and he won't just go along with Nicole Kidman's plot, just for the sake of it, just for like, yeah, half heart for just to save some money. It's yeah.
Yeah, because that adds another dimension to him. And it also sort of basically adds the twist that, Nicole Kidman was the real mastermind the whole time. It wasn't just a joint thing between her and Baldwin. She's like the most
Yeah.
ruthless of the two, and probably instigated the whole thing in the first place.
Yeah.
And
Another
that's,
thing I quite like about,
yeah.
I'm sorry, go on.
No, you first.
Another thing I quite like about the film that's about this scene that does sort of play into Alec Baldwin's character is that he could easily have just got out of the room and not got shot. But I think it's sort of his hubris that's like, I know I can talk her down. So
Yeah.
he sort of walks close to her. Because he's at the door. He could have just
Yeah.
one more step and he'd be fine. And
But it's
like, but
all.
it's like he's like, no. So yeah, it's yeah, go on, sorry. It's on
Yeah,
brand with
it's
the speech, isn't it?
yeah, it's like, she's just a hysterical woman. I can talk her out of this, get her to put the gun down and give Andy his money and not try and kill the kid, and everything's sorted. But oh no.
Yeah.
So what we then get with the next scene is Tracy breaking into the neighbor's house whilst calling Andy to get him to meet her for the money drop off. And as she goes to smother the boy with a plastic bag,
Yep.
which again we get from the beginning of the film, where she's telling the lad not to play with the plastic bag, and now here she is trying to smother the kid with the bag. The boy is revealed to then be the CPR dummy from earlier on.
It's all coming together, isn't
Yeah, it
it?
all is all paying off. There's a reason why we have that long shot of the CPR dummy, and now you know why. That's directing 101 from Harold Becker. So as she realizes what's happened, she's turned around and confronted by Andy, and in a rage, she then charges at him, and they both fall off the balcony and crash into a table, and miraculously, they don't receive that many injuries.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should at least be carted off in a stretcher or something, because they hit that table hard.
Yeah. I also I didn't like Like the bit where she just runs at him. I was like, why did she do that? That seems a bit much.
Yeah, it's also, I mean, I guess you could say it's in desperation, but it's also because she's the villain and it's the third act and she has to make the mistake to get her arrested.
Yeah. No, I get the reasons. I just don't buy it.
Yeah, I also find it, I mean, Nicole Kidman's obviously tall and reasonably well built, but I don't know, the way she charges at Bill Pullman and that's enough to knock them both over the balcony. Either that balcony's really shoddy or Nicole Kidman's been doing a lot of working out.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure if I said I'm not sure if I really said this yet, but I really I thought she's really good as the sort of as the villain when
Yeah.
it's I completely buy like in the scene previously, like there's a lot like when she talks about Alec Baldwin like hesitating when he discovered she was pregnant, there's
Yeah.
so much like I don't know like what's the word like poison in her eyes, like she's really
Yeah.
good, like selling that sort of that side of her.
Yeah, you
So
can
yeah,
see why.
I just think.
Yeah, you can see why this
Oh,
film
go
was.
on.
You can see why this film was really Nicole Kidman's first sort of big entry as being a star in her own right, as being being seen as an actress in her own right, because she really does. I mean, she really convinces as Tracy and showing all aspects of that character.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just think that this bit, the bit where she runs at Bill Pullman is a little bit, isn't the best. It's a little bit cartoony.
Yeah, because the rest of the film, even the scene where she's like, as you said, where she's talking about killing the kid, you know, it's a realistic rage and malice, I guess.
Yes.
Title drop there, malice. You can really see it in her emotions and in her performance and her voice. And this scene it's more of a cartoony villain-like sort of action that she's doing. But yeah, so Tracy gets arrested at gunpoint by Dana, and now she's being put
I
away.
like the oh, sorry.
No,
I
no,
like
no.
the when they're lying there and they say I think Bebe Neuwirth comes in and says we're waiting for Jed
Yeah.
and so I was like, I don't think he's coming. I thought that was a nice little acknowledgement that he's dead. But there's
Yeah.
also like someone I think Bill Pullman says we could really do with a doctor.
Oh
That was a
yeah.
nice little
Yeah,
but yeah.
that's like really kind of good snappy dialogue. But
Yeah.
the last twist comes up because as Tracy's being put into a police car, we see the neighbor and the son go back inside the house and we see that the kid's blind. So he wouldn't have seen anything.
Yeah. I didn't like that
I actually liked
twist.
it. No, I thought that was a really
Oh, you
good,
did.
darkly
Okay, cool.
comic twist. But all her attempts to kill this kid were for nothing, because then we see him walking in with the cane, and it's like, oh, I didn't have to do all that. I could have got away with it.
Yeah. I mean yeah, it just seemed a little bit of a little bit cheap to me. Just but like that's just me. I was like, oh, it just seemed a bit unnecessary. But I get it.
I don't know. I mean, it kind of sums up the whole film really, where half of it is really well put together, but the other half of it is so corny and cheesy at times.
Yeah. No, I get it.
So, I mean, what were your overall thoughts on Malice now that we've kind of come to the end?
Well, I think we've sort of talked about it a lot. Like, I think I really enjoyed watching it. So I think that's the main thing.
Yeah.
It's like every twist took me by surprise. I would, yeah. There's little details where I was like, I kind of saw that coming, but the broad strokes of it, I was completely taken in, and like every twist was like was a surprise, which is the main thing I think with a film like this. It reminded me a lot of like films from the same sort of era, where like where it's the same it's a similar thing where there's a sort of really sort of high concept sort of premise and like with and the plot and sort of out there plotting, but it just looks a bit boring. So like there's like Primal Fear is another
Yeah.
one
Oh,
like it
yeah.
reminded me of that, and like there's other ones that aren't as good like Presumed Innocent is another one.
Disclosure.
Yes, I think I've seen that one.
Yeah, that's got Michael Douglas, Demi Moore, VR sexual harassment.
Oh yes, yep. there's one called A Kiss Before Dying with
I've not seen that one.
Matt Dillon, I think, is in it. And another one called Unlawful Entry with Kurt Russell and Ray Liotta. So they're all sort of, they all feel similar to me. But I think this is one of the better ones. Yeah, I think all the performances are really good. It's just some, it's a little bit on the nose in places. Like
Yeah.
I've seen it credit, I've seen it described as a neo-noir, and I don't think I'd go that far.
No.
It feels more like melodrama than that. Like I think
Yeah.
The Last Seduction and Red Rock West sort of came out about, I think Last Seduction came out a year or two later, and Red Rock West would have come out about the same time as this. They're a lot more noiry, covering sort of kind of similar ground, but like a lot more head with much heavier sort of atmosphere. They're both really good. This one I feel is more schlocky and more sort of melodrama, but no less good for that, no less entertaining, but I just think it's a very different
I
kettle of
mean,
fish.
you could kind of argue that Basic Instinct was also quite kind of schlocky and melodramatic, which came out around the same time and is really well remembered. I mean, but the crossing the leg scene has been parodied so many times. I mean,
But I think it's sort of fondly remembered as schlock, you know, not necessarily as a serious film, I would potentially argue.
yeah, I mean, would you argue that Malice is like somewhere in between schlock and serious, and maybe that's why people haven't remembered it so much?
Yeah, maybe it's a weird like hybrid of like maybe it doesn't quite know what it is. Maybe people were so annoyed about the misdirection
Yeah.
first half that they didn't link. Maybe it's one of the ones that maybe it's a film that like you're sort of one and done, like you're sort of I've seen it too recently to make this call maybe, but like it's one of those ones where like what's another one like that, maybe The Usual Suspects, maybe a film where the twist is everything, so when you come back and watch it again there's not so much
I
there.
know when looking at the posters of this film, when it was advertised in the UK, the twist was heavily promoted. Not in the American advertising, interestingly enough, but when it was released in Britain, like 4 months later or whatever, as films usually were back then, Hollywood films usually were released a lot later in Britain than in America. It was advertised as "Don't give away the twist." So the twist played a bit, the plot twist. Played the halfway plot switch played a big part in the marketing, certainly in the UK.
Yeah, so maybe that's it. Maybe it's one of those ones where if you know the twist, there's not much more to it. Maybe I don't know.
Well,
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I'm selling it short. I don't think I'm going to forget it, so that's good.
oh
But
no.
it's also not a film I think I'm necessarily going to revisit that much.
Okay.
I've
Well,
apart from that one scene, which is incredible.
Oh, yeah. Well, hopefully us giving away the twist hasn't put any listeners off seeing the film and experiencing it for themselves, because I share pretty much the same views as you, Nick, but I do think it's a film you have to watch at least once just to see how crazy the plot gets, how many twists and turns it takes you, because it's almost something you have to see as well as hear described, if that makes
Yeah,
sense.
no, you're right as well, because there are scenes like the one with Alec Baldwin and Nicole Kidman that really sort of land much better when you know the whole picture,
Oh yeah.
and you know Aaron Sorkin's dialogue is brilliant. Like
Oh, it is.
I feel like I might have played it down a bit, but it is really good, and like so it is definitely worth watching for that if for that alone. But yeah.
It definitely makes it stand out from other thrillers of around the same time. Like, if we compare this to, say, there's another Kevin Spacey one from around the same time called Consenting Adults, which
Oh,
is
that was a
quite bad.
yeah. That's not a good film.
No, it's not. It's not a good film, but I was just thinking that as like, is you've got the acting talent with Spacey and some of the other actors, but you don't have the writing. You don't have a guy writing it like Aaron Sorkin to give it that extra oomph. And it
Yeah.
loses so much.
Is it Kevin Kline in that as well?
Yeah, it's Kevin Spacey and Kevin Kline, the two Kevins.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's not that. No, this is a lot. Malice is a lot better than that, I would say.
Yeah, it really kind of keeps you on your toes. So yeah, I don't have any other better way to close this out than that was our episode of Malice. And I just want to thank you, Nick, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
What have you got planned?
Oh, what now or ne
No, no,
next?
no, 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 not literally right now, but in terms of what are you kind of, are you writing up anything that we need to
I'm
What do I promote?
currently writing a review of Civil War, the new Alex Garland film. I've got a lot of got a lot of stuff coming up. I'm reviewing the new VOD releases of Kim Ji-won's Korean films,
Oh, yeah.
Bittersweet Life and The Foul King, and the Criterion release of The Devil and oh, I can't remember the full name. I think it's All the Money in the World, all that money can buy, one of those
Oh,
two.
yeah.
It's a very good film. The title just is not very memorable, obviously.
No, it's the same.
And I'll be writing a retrospective of the TV series of Fargo soon as well. It's got a lot of irons in the fire.
It's what was it's good to have that because I mean initially you sort of think, oh, too much work, but then when it sort of goes, you're like, no, actually it's I quite liked having a lot of work. Can I get that back,
Yeah,
please?
it's peaks and troughs, isn't it? It's like when you're not working, you're sort of desperately clawing for stuff. You've got it. It's like, oh, I've got too
Yeah,
much, but it's nice to be busy.
it is definitely. So Films That Time Forgot is available on most podcast platforms, including SoundCloud, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. But if you want early access, subscribe to my Patreon. That's Thorny Film Reviews. That's Thorny Film Reviews. And you can, if you subscribe, you get access to not only my podcast early on, but you also get access to my written reviews, which I'm going to start publishing more of. You can also read my reviews on the Wee Review. That's WEE Review. I write for them. They're an Edinburgh-based arts website. I write film reviews for them, and I also review comedy, stand-up comedy, and stage stuff for them during the Fringe. And join us next episode when we'll be looking at a very different film from this one, the 1988 Arnold Schwarzenegger James Belushi buddy cop movie Red Heat. And until then, keep watching.